I want to scream at everybody that I see do this, but it's like people that buy, I don't know how familiar you are with this, with the Xbox Series X and where the vent is, but it's on the top of the console if you stand it vertically.
Oh, I think I saw that at your place, or I've seen pictures of it, and you can see that the fan is on the top.
Yeah, like it's that's where all the holes are. It's made to be vented from the top. And then you see pictures of people putting it in their entertainment stands, laying it on its side, and then shoving that side against the inside.
The wall or whatever.
Like whatever the section is of that entertainment unit. And it's like, no, it's going to overheat and explode because you have nowhere for the heat to go. And you're always just, I don't know, in my mind, I'm always just wondering, all right, how long is it going to take before that stops working? And then you go, I don't know what happened. It just stopped working because you placed it in the wrong fucking spot.
I'm getting red rings of death and I don't know why.
Right. Like... Hello and welcome to another episode of Bry Guy and His Super Friends. I'm your host, Brian Labick. Joining me for this episode is the melted monster himself, Andy Stolz.
What's up, podcast people?
So we got a slim show as far as, I guess, guests. Just Andy and I for this one, just the two of us. So maybe we'll just kind of open...
the two of us.
Every time I say it, I'm tempted to sing it too. And I was like, no, it's too early for that shit. I'm not going to do it.
The Will Smith version, right?
Yeah, that's the one that I was obsessed with for a while.
You gotta go to it.
So yeah, it's just us.
Just me and you.
That's from the song too, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll kind of open with... Because I know we haven't done it in a really long time. But Andy, what you been up to?
Been playing Breath of the Wild.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. I beat my first, Divine Beast.
See, so, it's already over my head because I started that game and never got more than probably an hour or two into it. So
I feel like there was a steep curve where I didn't like the game for a long time because literally all I was doing was running around dying a lot.
That's how I feel.
So I finally got the courage to sort of start it back up, and there was like a 3-year gap between like my saves and when I started picking it back up.
Yep.
And I feel like I'm much more in the groove and I can do like the cool stuff. I can do like the flurry rushes and block and, you know, sled ride my shield down hills and stuff like that.
Stuff that
I didn't think that I would ever be able to do. And I watch people online do it and I'm like, how the F did they do that? and now I'm doing some of that stuff. I'm still not 100% great at it. I run head first into battle with very few hearts left for just because like I can take these guys and then immediately die. You know, I'm like, well, I probably should have healed. Shit. So, but
just with most things. It's,
I'm still having fun with it. Jess and I just completed Harry Potter 1-4, Lego Harry Potter 1-4.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And there was a big bug in it that like the moving staircases in Hogwarts wouldn't move back so we could get back up it. We were trying to 100% it, and like there's a big bug where like if you don't do it when you're there the first time, sometimes the stairs will never come back.
Oh no.
So we were at like 98.7%
done.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Apparently there's a couple of characters and like one of those red Lego boxes that give you like the thing. And we were like, fuck, we really wanted to 100% that. So
man, those Lego games, they have so much shit hidden in them.
There is, and we were really proud of where we got, and then when I started Googling why we couldn't get up there, because we knew the stuff was up there, we just couldn't get the stairs to move. It was like, yeah, this is a big bug that they're never going to fix, and you're screwed. You have to replay
that
it
sucks.
All. And we're like, we're not replaying this. So.
Well, in my heart, you have 100%. How about
that? That's what we said. I was like, I feel like we did it. We knew where the stuff was. We were going to be able to accomplish it. We just don't get to show it on paper that we did it, you know?
Yeah. I was going to say, I'll give you the option up front, because I know we usually do plugs at the end, but plugs are probably better at the beginning. Anything you want to plug?
Yeah. www.meltedmonstergames.com. We're working on a game called Drieg. You can find it on the Steam store. Just DREEG. You can wishlist it. We're getting close to maybe even releasing a demo fairly soon.
Nice.
Kevin's been bonkers good at crushing some of the bugs that have been coming up. I did live stream a Dreg playtest on my Twitch. It's twitch.tv/THEDREWID79.
The Druid 79.
Yeah, the Druid 79. So if you ever want to catch some Dreg playtesting, I also do a couple some magic things, and I don't know. I'll be a variety streamer, I feel like, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I keep missing. So I feel like I caught maybe your first one, and then I haven't seen anyone's other than that. So I got to keep an eye out for when you're,
yeah, when you're live. Yeah, I've literally only done it three times, so it's very new. Okay. I haven't really gotten into a schedule for it. And then we've been watching the old X-Men animated series in anticipation to watch 97. So
you have not started 97 yet?
No, we just started the seasons. Was it five?
I think it was five, yeah.
Six?
I think it was five. I want to
say
five. Well,
we're on the second to last season. The last season only has like 10 episodes.
Okay.
So I think we're on four, maybe.
Okay.
So
does it hold up? Because like you and I watched that growing up.
I feel like it definitely holds up. Like okay. I'm enjoying it, and I still get all excited when the theme song comes on. We usually skip intros, and I'm like, Jess, I am never skipping this intro, just so you know. She's like, okay, that's fine.
And so, that will continue with 97.
Yeah, and we'll both be running around the house going, so.
Well, I'm looking forward to when you get to 97, because I think 97 is really good right now. Like, it's only three episodes in right now.
Okay.
First two are fucking awesome. Three is fine. I think the first two were definitely better than the third one, but I'm so in. Like, it's really, really cool. I haven't been up to too much either, I think. Yeah. Like, I was watching X-Men 97. Bad Batch is going on. I've been watching Bad Batch, trying to keep up with that one.
I haven't watched
that's still awesome.
Any of that.
Yeah. Bad Batch is really good. Playing wise, bouncing around between everything, the back catalog continues to grow for games. I was just telling Andy before we started, I got back into, you know, fitting for this episode, but Ghostbusters Spirits Unleashed, I jumped back into because they had an update around this movie. So that game is still fun, I think. It's easy enough to, I feel like, jump back into, play some matches and get out, and, you know, however much it holds your attention, but I think it's still pretty fun.
Sometimes those games...
Go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. No, go ahead. But sometimes the games that you can just hop in and do like a quick 20 minutes or 30 minutes, and like that's maybe all the time you have.
Right.
Sometimes those are really awesome, because some of the big games like Breath of the Wild or like BioShock, like, are involving. You know, like playing 30 minutes isn't usually rewarding.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna go cook some stuff, and then you're like, oh, 30 minutes is up. That literally cooked stuff for 30 minutes in Breath of the Wild. This was not fun.
Yeah, because BioShock is definitely on my back. Like, you know, I said it before, that I started streaming it. I got one playthrough in. I need to do more. I need to finish it on stream. And that's, yeah, same kind of reason. It's like, I want to sit down and be able to stream for probably 2-3 hours of the game in that chunk. And if I can't do it, I'm not gonna stream it. So it's just, yeah, more difficult to do that during the week. If I could find some time on the weekends to do that, that would probably be the time to get to it. But yeah, the games you can pop in and out of, that's sort of what I've been playing, like that one. I have been trying to Helldive as much as I can with Helldivers 2. Again, trying to convince Andy to get the game and play, because I don't have too many people to play with. And I think it's definitely one you need a squad for. I think it's much more enjoyable that way. Playing with randoms is very hit or miss. And then bouncing around between some of the other regulars. I'm still dabbling in Destiny. As much as everybody else has bailed on that game, I'm still
really,
jumping
still
in
dabbling.
Here and there. Yeah. They, I mean, they
OG
had
two.
Two. Two. Okay. Yeah. I mean, they had, they're putting stuff in the store to buy, like cosmetic stuff. That
oh,
is in
you're
my
a sucker.
Wheelhouse. Yeah. They did a Mass Effect one, which I haven't actually bought any of the Mass Effect armors but they do look really cool. They did do a Ghostbusters pack, which I did buy that one.
Really?
So I now have a ship that looks like Ecto-1.
That's awesome.
So that was really cool. It comes with, I think it comes with a ship, a sparrow, and a ghost. And the ship looks like Ecto-1. The sparrow looks like Garaka. And the ghost is basically like a Slimer thing. Like, it looks like the ghost bot is right in the center of Slimer, and then it looks like almost like paper mache Slimer, like a like a party decoration with like slinky arms and stuff.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
The fun thing about Destiny that I always really enjoyed were getting the ships and the shaders. I thought those were some of the coolest. Because I didn't feel like much of the cosmetic, like armors and weapons, really mattered to me. I more went with functionality over form.
Right.
I didn't really care what I looked like necessarily, but the ships are always, and the shaders I thought were always really cool.
Yeah. So yeah, they have another content, like some sort of bigger content drop coming up, I think, in the next week or two. Because Final Shape, their real big content drop, got delayed to June, so they need something to fill the gap, so they're trying to put in some sort of, like, horde mode type thing, tower defense-ish thing.
Yeah, I think Mike Bradley was telling us about that.
Mike was talking about that, yeah. So, that's coming, so I'll probably dabble with that and see how that plays. I'm trying to think what else. And, still dabbling Call of Duty, because as much as I hate that game, I can't stop. I need to break away from it to play other things, but...
Is this Final Shape, like, the final Destiny thing ever?
I thought they've announced, like, they want to do stuff after that, but that's the at the rate they're going, this could be the last one. I mean, if it makes a shit ton of money, it might limp them along a little bit more, but I think Bungie as a company is not doing well, and Destiny as a game is not making the money that it once did, so that's not going to help.
Yeah, I feel like it is really sort of trending down.
Yeah, which it's like that was always the shining example for live service games. And the core of Destiny is, I think, really, really good. Like the gameplay, the mechanics, all that stuff works for me. It's also, I think, a very community-driven game that if you don't have the community to play with or people, you know, friends or Destiny players that you play with consistently, I think that's where it kind of loses its draw. Like, there's still stuff in that game I have not done because I don't have people to do it with,
like raids and stuff.
Yeah, and so there's content there I would love to experience and try to unlock some of the stuff you can get from that stuff. But
another thing that was daunting for me for that stuff, it wasn't necessarily the getting the group together. It was, I didn't think that I was ever going to be good enough to do the stuff that it wanted us to do. Cause I dabbled with some of the raids and I'm like, this is, I'm not getting it. I'm just not getting the mechanics or I'm just not good enough to pull this off.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
maybe
that
that's
was
like
always
a
tough too.
Practice thing, but.
Yeah, I think it's, in my experience, the few times I've done the raids, it's much better to be the one person that doesn't know what's going on with a group of five other guys that are able to direct you, as opposed to trying to go in with four or five people that have never played
it before.
And trying to have one person explain to you what's going on, that never really works well.
Because the same thing happened to me with World of Warcraft when I tried to get into it, which was like Wrath of the Lich King. I tried to do some raiding in that, and it's just it was a disaster. I'm premium hard content is just, it's not really my forte.
Yeah, it's like I like the challenge, but I'm one of those people that if I don't do it the first or second try, I get really frustrated,
and then it becomes daunting. It's like, that's a mountain, and I'm a molehill kind of guy.
It's like some of the stuff that I usually describe it as, like, the frustratingly satisfying or frustratingly rewarding. Like, it sucks when you are in it and you can't do it, but when you finally get over that hill, there's such like jubilation of like, oh yeah, let's fucking go. Yeah. Like we have done this thing. Like it's cool. But yeah, to get there, the struggle to get there is what it's like when you think about the anxiety flips in, because it's like, I have so many other things I could be playing and I'm devoting so much time to this thing that's not going anywhere.
Right.
That's the frustrating part.
Not getting any traction whatsoever. Right. That was like the extent, like I tried doing some raids and just it didn't take, but like I liked some of the nightfalls. Some of those got really difficult and felt like those were more approachable because they're shorter, you know?
Yeah.
Hard, but shorter.
Because they do, granted, I don't remember last time you played, but they have like the in-between now of like the nightfalls maybe like a half hour thing. And then the raids could be like, if you don't know what you're doing and need instructions, it could be 3-4 hours to get through a raid.
Easily, yeah.
They have the dungeons now, which are maybe like 1.5-2 hours to get through with people. It's another three-man activity to go through those. Okay. I've done a couple more of those than I have raids. Like those I've gone into with three of us not knowing what to do, and then we've kind of tried to figure it out. And they're not as daunting. Like they're still challenging and a little bit frustrating, but those have been easier to complete than trying to go to a raid blind and do that kind of thing. So,
okay.
But all right, so enough about us. Let's get into what we were going to talk about. So it's just two of us again for this one. We're going to talk about some Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. I'll give our thoughts on that one, which honestly I guess fits for the two of us because we both had this as our most anticipated movie.
It was number one.
2024.
I think 2023 as well.
I should go back and look at that list. Yeah, because it did get delayed.
Yeah.
So
I want to say it was number one both times for me.
Yeah, I gotta pull up.
Where's and it was not named, I think, 2023 yet. Like it didn't have the subtitle yet.
Yeah, I think that's correct. All right, let me look at 2023. I got the list up. Afterlife 2 was on your list, so it made my list, but it was number 4 for me in 2023.
Okay.
I had some other stuff ahead of it, but yeah. So we are, you know, going into this. Maybe a little bit more biased because we were hotly anticipating this movie. So we'll see where we land with reviews and whatnot.
Yeah. Great expectations.
Yeah, exactly. So this is just a little bit of background for the movie. So this is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. It's the fourth movie in the OG timeline of the Ghostbusters movie. So this does not go in line with the 2016 Ghostbusters. That's like its own separate thing. So Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, Ghostbusters Afterlife, which was 2021 when that came out, which, again, Andy and I both loved that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this one. Afterlife and Frozen Empire were both written by Jason Reitman and Gil Kenan. Jason Reitman directed Afterlife. For this one, he traded director duties to Gil Kenan. So they both wrote this one, but Gil Kenan directed Frozen Empire this time.
Has he ever directed anything? Is this his directorial debut?
No, he has done other things. And the most notable that I know him from is the animated movie Monster House.
Never saw that.
I don't remember what year that came out. I know that's older, but I'm pretty sure he directed
it. It's a few years.
And I think he wrote that one too. I didn't look that one up, but I know that's the one. I know he's done a couple other movies. I think maybe the Poltergeist remake. And now I feel like I should look it up because I'm just throwing stuff out there, but I can come back to that. the cast from Afterlife returns. So we get Carrie Coon back as Callie, Paul Rudd as Gary Grubison, McKenna Grace as Phoebe, Finn Wolfhard as Trevor, Logan Kim as Podcast, Celeste O'Connor as Lucky. OG cast comes back for this one. Dan Aykroyd's back, Ernie Hudson, Annie Potts, Bill Murray. This time through, they've added some more characters. So we get Camille Nanjiani in this one, Patton Oswalt, Emily Aylin Lind, James Acaster, and the return of the dickless himself, William Atherton. going through some of the numbers. So comparing to Afterlife, Ghostbusters Afterlife had a budget of $75 million. Domestic opening was $44 million. The worldwide total from its theatrical run, $204 million. So not great, but it turned a profit, I would think. So enough to get a sequel.
It's a little shocking to me.
Yeah, even the budget, like I can understand Afterlife was, you know, small town, you know, smaller environments and that kind of thing. So I could see the budget being smaller, but only ending at $204 million, that does feel low to me. But
it does, yeah, very low.
I feel like just because I'm a fan, like I feel like it needs to be bigger. Like I've, you know, I probably saw it 5 times. So
this should be making real money. Saw it. Yeah,
yeah, that was every movie that I get real excited about. It's always like anybody that wants to go, I don't care. Like, I'm in. If you just need an excuse to go to a movie, I will go with you. And, you know, I've been telling people the same for this one. Granted, I've only gotten to it twice so far. it's, you know, it's only been a week since it's been out. So I saw it twice opening weekend. I assume you've only seen it once, Frozen Empire?
Yep, only once.
Okay. So any guesses for the budget for Frozen Empire? Because this, the budget for this movie came in under what I expected.
You said 57 for the first one?
75. 75 million.
For 125 for this one.
100 million.
Really? Okay. Yeah, it is lower then.
Opening weekend domestic, it made 45 million. So it made 1 million more than what Afterlife did. Which is funny because all the headlines I was seeing was like, you know, Frozen Empire makes more than Afterlife in its opening weekend. Okay, 1 million more. Like, that's not like. current worldwide total $71 million. So it is almost to the point where it's breaking even.
Okay.
I'm really curious what it does second weekend and weekends to follow. This weekend, it's going to have competition from Godzilla and Kong. Yep. So most premium theaters, I think, are losing out. Like Ghostbusters are not going to be in the Dolby, the IMAX. Kong's getting all that stuff this weekend. So I'm hoping it has some legs. I'd like to see this continue and hit at least what Afterlife made, if not more.
That'd be nice.
Ratings currently, Rotten Tomatoes has a critic rating of 44%, which is feels really low to me. Audience rating,
very low.
Audience rating is 84%, which feels more in line.
Yep.
Metacritic has a Metascore of 45, user score 5.7.
Out of 10?
I guess. I assume most things are going to 100% or 10. Yeah.
I hope it's not 100.
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean. Like, the Metascore would be 100 since it's 45. The user score would be 10 since it's 5.7. Is my logic. The one thing I saw going around the internet, which kind of blew my mind, somebody put a side-by-side comparison from two IGN reviews. One of them was Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. The other one that IGN reviewed was Madam Web.
Okay.
They ranked Madam Web 5 out of 10 and Ghostbusters Frozen Empire 4 out of 10.
Really?
So according to IGN, Madam Web is a better movie than Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Well, I mean, I didn't see Madam Web because I just had no interest whatsoever. So I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. I definitely don't think it's worse than Madam Web. But, you know, like you said, cards on the table, I have not seen Madam Web. But I would believe what the internet is telling me and that Madam Web is a dumpster fire.
Yep.
But again, as we mentioned, I'm definitely biased because I want Ghostbusters to do well and I want Sony's Spider-Man universe to crash and burn. So either way, I think the moral of this story is like, don't let the reviews scare you from either movie, but you know, especially Ghostbusters. Go see Ghostbusters. So before we get to spoilers and story specifics, we usually try to go through some general thoughts. So Andy, general thoughts for this movie. What do you think?
So generally, I'm going to bring up the definition of a word here that I feel like really pins what I feel about it. And that is rollicking.
Okay.
And the definition of that is exuberantly lively and amusing.
Okay, yeah.
So a rollicking film is entertaining and enjoyable, but not very serious.
Okay.
And I feel like that's sort of really is the best adjective that I can come up with. This is an extremely annoying, not annoying, extremely enjoyable movie, but it doesn't take itself serious.
Yeah, it's definitely very fun. Like it's a fun time at the movies, which is what you want to go to the movies for.
It really is. It's one of those popcorn movies where you can just be like, you're smiling the whole time. It's when you get to like the plot points and the characters and stuff where I feel like it loses a little bit of its weight.
Yeah. I think bullet point review for me is probably like I enjoyed this movie. It didn't hit the levels that I wanted to, like Afterlife did.
Correct.
Like that was the hype level for me. I was going in after Afterlife, which I absolutely loved. And really wanted to continue that. So, and again, it could be a case of just like having higher expectations for this movie and then it just kind of underwhelming a little bit. So it didn't feel like it was that high for me, but I still think it's really solid. I think it's a really good Ghostbusters movie. I think there's some good stuff to be had here. I think my biggest issue with it was that there are too many characters and storylines going on.
The problem, I think you hit it on the head there. The problem is there's too many characters and not a lot of them get anything to really do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which tends to happen when you have these big, like, teams of characters.
And some it sucks because I
just sort of afterthoughts.
I like the characters and I want more from them. And I think Afterlife worked really well because it was a much more like intimate story with some of the characters. And some of the characters in that movie got sidetracked and shortchanged.
Yep.
Some of the same characters in that movie got sidetracked and shortchanged in this one. And then they just added more people to it. So it's fun to have all these people in the movie. And, you know, the little bit we get with some of these characters, I think, is a good starting point. But it just kind of, I don't know, kind of slows the pacing down. It feels a little bit bloated.
I feel like characters and story were underdeveloped.
Yeah. Because, like, there's no guarantee some of these characters are going to come back for if they do another movie, if they come back at the next one. So if this is all you get for some of these people, then, yeah, I think some of them were definitely shortchanged. But, again, overall, I think it's really good. I don't want anyone reading the reviews to be dissuaded from this movie. I definitely think if you're curious, if you've liked Afterlife, definitely check it out. Hell, if you're just a Ghostbusters fan in general, just go see the movie, check it out. Hopefully, you know, the reviews do not do it justice for you and you'll enjoy it better than what the internet is telling you you should, which is part of the reason I hate the internet, which is always confusing to me because we're on the internet. Like, this is how we thrive. We are here for you to be listened to, you know, on the internet. But so, you know, just, yeah, give it a shot. Just like we try to do, I think, with most movies we review. This is our opinion. You are welcome to your own opinion. So you could love it or hate it, either, you know, more or less than either of us right now. So don't listen to us for whether or not you should see it or not. I just think you should. So just go check it out, form your own opinion, and let us know what you think. Any other sort of like bullet point, spoiler-free general thoughts you want to get into before we jump into spoilery stuff?
No, I don't think so. I think everything else might be a little bit on the spoilery side of stuff.
Yeah, because I think, you know, the specific instances we want to talk to or characters we want to bring up is probably a little bit more spoilery. All right, so then with that, we'll get into some spoilers. So if you haven't seen the movie and do not want any plot points or spoilers, pause this now, come back after watching the movie. Otherwise, you can continue on, listen to our thoughts on the film as we probably will spoil some plot points for you. Either way, spoilers to follow.
Wee-oo, wee-oo.
Spoiler!
Wee-oo, wee-oo.
Spoiler!
You know, something like that.
All right, so we're into the spoiler stuff. One thing I was telling Andy before this is I try to go back and listen to our Afterlife review because I know at the end of that one, we sort of tried to predict or you know, take stabs or guesses at where we thought the story could go in an eventual sequel. Because Afterlife has like mid-credit scenes and stuff like that where it seems like it's setting something up and we didn't know where it was going to go. So I'm just going to try to go through some of the bullet point stuff. We'll see where it goes, you know, where we talk about. So one thing, Andy, that you may or may not remember you theorized about was obviously the Spangler family would be a part of this movie. But you were going even further and predicting that Phoebe or no, sorry, Callie's mom and possibly grandparents were going to be included in this movie, and were somehow convinced that they would be tied to Viggo.
I do not remember that.
I think we had talked about like it, you know, bringing the nostalgia back and if they would actually go as far as bringing Viggo back for a sequel.
Yeah.
And I think you like the idea enough that you're like, well, we don't talk about the mom and the lineage a little bit more. So he's like, you were somehow tying that with Viggo, not saying specifics, but like that was sort of where you thought it could go.
It could. And I thought that was a logical progression since we sort of revisited Gozer in the first one that, so I thought maybe the natural progression was, you know, Viggo got more powerful somehow in like some sort of ooze filled well in New York City or something. He's, you know, bubbling over or something, you know?
Yeah. One of the other things we talked about, I had mentioned the legal issues of having underage kids be Ghostbusters. And you thought there was a law that family members could use kids as workers? Was a comment that you made? But I mean, that is kind of addressed. Like, that's at the beginning of the movie. Does.
Yeah, we sort of did talk about something that was valid that actually did come to pass. So
yeah, so I thought that worked. We had correctly predicted sort of Ray being the mentor for this movie, in a sense, Winston financing and mentoring. Josh predicted the age jump correctly. He was saying, you know, if they were going to still be sort of like underage or use the same actors, they could only go a few years of a time jump. So I think this movie is like 3 years after Afterlife-ish.
I think so, yeah.
So that... Again, it fits more real time with, you know, when they filmed it and the actual age, you know, more in line with the age jump of the characters, actors, because they're all young kids. So if they start growing up too fast, you start to notice it, which I really would spin off into Logan Kim for podcast, because he looks completely different.
I didn't recognize him at first, quite frankly. Everyone else was very recognizable, I thought.
Yeah.
Maybe Lucky a little bit. I feel like she grew up more so than like Finn did.
Mm-hmm.
But podcast for sure. I was like, who? Oh, wow. Holy shit. This is podcast. Right.
Like, he's at that puberty stage where the voice is changing. He's getting taller. He's looking different. Like, yeah, that was.
Yeah.
He was still great. Like, I love that character and I really want more from him. But. Yeah, that was the most one of the shocking things of the movie is like, holy shit, he looks different.
He did.
Josh also was kind of predicting maybe where the story was kind of trying to go with Phoebe, sort of going with the underage thing. He didn't think she would be one to be on the front lines ghostbusting stuff. He thought she would be better off as like lab tech support. Back at the firehouse, sort of just working on stuff, which is sort of where this movie, at least the story, tries to take her. Like, she wants to be out there, you know, underage, putting her life in danger. Parents don't want to do that, so they want to keep her safe, and they're trying to keep her in the firehouse, which is kind of where the story was trying to go.
Right. He was close, though, because I feel like Lucky sort of does that. Like, she's not frontline.
Yeah.
She's, like, definitely in the lab, like, testing stuff and making mm-hmm. things better. And busting ghosts from like a possessed item standpoint. So
yeah, we talked about franchising the Ghostbusters and what they could mean for like a bloated cast, and like we specifically talked about if it suddenly gets more groups of Ghostbusters, the cast is going to explode. How do you make the movie easier to follow or you know, keep people's attention on a certain group of characters when the groups of Ghostbusters expand? I think that was Josh's point. And I think I had come back and said, I was hoping they would sort of keep it focused on Phoebe and the Spengler family, and the other Ghostbuster teams would be more cameo-esque type of thing. Yep. Which is still, you know, it's a juggling act for them. And I think it's the thing that the movie struggles with.
It really did. Like, yeah.
The story is definitely still central to the Spengler family and what they're going through, but it expands the ghostbusting business, which is something I've wanted to see. But yeah, at the same time, now we're getting introduced to a whole new cast of characters that it's difficult to give them screen time and get to know them. And other than just being sort of side characters, like, I can't remember his name, but I think James, Acaster, right? That was the guy's name. Was one of the new ones, like the blonde scientist guy that was in the engineering stuff.
Yeah. I don't remember his character's name.
Yeah, I can't. I should have IMDb up when I'm looking at this. But yeah, like he was one that was there. We got a little bit of time with him, but not really knowing too much about the character. He was there for a couple one-off jokes and stuff like that, but.
He was like the head researcher in Winston's like Ghostbusting research center.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's tough. It's like expanding the cast the way they did in this movie almost makes me wish they would start doing Ghostbusters spinoffs if they're doing franchising of the business. Like, let's focus on a movie per team. And then if you want to do some sort of Avengers style team up thing for a Ghostbusters event movie, I think that's something they could do.
Do you think Ghostbusters show spinoffs would be better? I feel like it's
almost if they wanted
like
to?
too risky to like make a movie about like in, I don't know, San Francisco based
right
Ghostbusters.
Yeah, because if the movies are only making like $250 million at the box office, they are not going to make smaller, you know, a movie per team. There's no way that they would.
No, but
that.
If you do like a little mini series or something on Paramount Plus, or I don't know, what does WB put stuff out on?
Well, it's this Sony movie, so Sony this does not Sony's have their service. Right. So I don't know where they'd probably shop it around. Hypothetically, if they did it, they'd probably shop it around to other places. They do have, I think it's animated, but I think they do have a Ghostbusters animated show coming to Netflix over the next year or two. I think that's still being worked on, but I don't know if that ties into the movies at all, if it's its own separate thing. I want to say separate thing, but don't quote me on that because I'm not quite sure where that's going. But yeah, to your point, I think that would be a good way to do it. Like, you know, bring the budget down a little bit, get more personal stories with new team and check, you know, start to work their dynamic and how they fit into the overall Ghostbusting franchise and stuff like that.
Because I feel like if you make sort of a hit show and then you bring them to the big screen, it can really fuel like people like, oh, I love that show, I'm going to go see that movie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be really cool to see. I'm not crossing my fingers or holding my breath. I don't think they'd do it. But I definitely see that as an option, something I'd like to see. I mean, at this point, anything Ghostbusters related, I'm going to check out. So I'd love to see it, but I don't think they're going to do it. What else did we talk about? I had said I wanted to see something different. I didn't want, like, you know, had you talked about Viggo, I really didn't want to see Viggo back because I feel like that was going to just rehash some of the same stuff. I wanted to see a new villain, and I referenced the 2016 movie of having a plot that's sort of like a man-made event to try to trigger the ghost thing, which is kind of close to what we got. Like, it's still a ghost that was, you know, we get the flashback at the beginning of a ghost that's been around. They had captured it back in the early 1900s, but it's still
kind of... It
wasn't
entirely new enemy, right?
Yeah. It was, yeah, new villain at least was a check.
I don't know if it was entirely man-made, but...
I don't know. It almost gave us like half a point for that only because it was under control until, you know, I guess man affect, you know, humans affect, like, you know, affected the orb thing. And then cause Garaka to get released. Is sort of where I was going with that. But yeah, the more I'm thinking about it, really, I don't know if that still classifies or not. Either way, we got a new villain, which I think is good. Josh had predicted Walter Peck coming back to badger them in the movie. Which, yep, that worked. So we got that.
All right. Good job, Josh.
And we had one of the questions I think I brought up then, which I think is still relevant for this one, was if there was possibly too much nostalgia in Afterlife that pulled away from the movie. And I think this one plays on this nostalgia a lot as well. So I don't know, Andy, the nostalgia in this movie, did you like it? Find it distracting? Anything?
It was on the verge of being distracting, I felt like. The nostalgia sort of flipped from the villain to like the scene. Was mostly nostalgia, right? Like, the villain was nostalgia in the villain and like the equipment and stuff, but it was an entirely new city, state, all that. But now we're in the firehouse, you know, we've got the original containment unit. We got Walter Peck. We even got the head librarian, you know, in the library and everything.
Right. Yeah.
So I feel like the nostalgia sort of flipped a little bit as what was being nostalgic. And they did lean into it, but at the same point, it was nice to get new, like the new enemy that sort of burst the nostalgia.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's still like the Easter eggy stuff is all over this movie. And I liked a lot of that stuff in the first one, and I still feel like I liked it here, but I can see how it could be. Like, I really don't want every one of these movies, if they continue to make them, to just be nostalgia trips all the time. Like, just Easter eggy stuff from old movies. Like, I still would like them to just start, I don't know, almost like carving their own path with some of this stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, again, I'm also the type of person that eats a lot of that stuff up and it's like, oh, did you see that? Like, I know there's a moment, and I missed it the second time through, but I saw it the first time. In the, like, engineering lab in the aquarium, at one point, they're walking through the lab from, like, left to right on screen, and in the background, in the testing area where Lucky was trying out that arm strap, like, the wrist-strapped proton pack, they had somebody back there with a slime blower blowing slime on somebody that was in the background. He's just standing there taking it, like he's the happiest man in the world.
I remember that.
Like, stuff like that is, like, really fun to me. But... yeah, it's and then there's other ones. I can't think off the top of my head what some of the other ones were. But, I mean, even just really having, like, some of the OG cast, I don't feel like needs to be here anymore. Like, Bill Murray, I could take him or leave him. I don't think he contributes anything to these movies. He
didn't really do much of anything.
Got a couple of one-liners. He wants to be there.
Yeah. He didn't, like, didn't seem like he put forth a whole ton of effort, so
yeah. I could literally cut him out of the movie and be fine. I would be perfectly happy with Ray and Winston, who seem like they want to be there and are actually trying to act and give us some performance. And even Annie Potts, like, she I think is one of the ones that got shortchanged because they put her in here. The marketing is like, hey, Melitz is in uniform. She's got a Ghostbuster jumpsuit on. She just wears it. She does nothing.
She doesn't do anything.
She doesn't wear a pack. She, I think, tries to use that wrist-mounted, proton stream thing. Yep. And that's it.
And I got excited because I thought we were going to get a scene with her, like, actually using it to its capabilities.
Yes.
And
yes.
The only scene we get of her using it is when everybody's using their,
right.
their packs at the same time. So she gets missed.
I lost in the shuffle.
I didn't look at her when that happened, you know?
Yeah.
And I kind of, like, when I see it again, I'd like to, because I wanted to see sort of how that functioned.
Right. Yeah. I think, and maybe we'll just use this to sort of go into the bloatedness of the cast, but there are many characters here that I feel like get shortchanged.
Oh, yes.
Obviously, Phoebe gets the spotlight again. It's, I think she's got, has to be the central character in whatever this goes forward if they're using these characters. I think it's definitely mainly her story.
But then the second, I didn't understand, like, the second central character, in my opinion, was the ghost.
I'd say the story focuses a lot on Gary, Paul Rudd's character. I think he gets more to do in this one.
I guess, yeah, you're right, because. Yeah, because of his trying to be, like, the father figure.
Trying to fit, like, figure out his role in the family dynamic for this group.
Yeah.
So I think those two get the focus for the Spangler family, when in Afterlife it was the mom, Callie, and Phoebe. And then Paul Rudd was much more supporting in that. Trevor doesn't really get much to do in either movie.
Nothing. He didn't do anything in this other than the obligatory Slimer cameo.
Right. So Slimer didn't really need to be in here either.
Oh, he didn't. Like, I'd rather have seen Slimer have, like, some sort of role to play other than just randomly being in their attic.
Yeah.
Then,
which I guess is, like, sort of leaning into the real Ghostbusters inspiration for this, where it's just like he's just hanging out at the firehouse, like they're not worried about catching him, he's just there.
But he was like a pet for them in the cartoon, you know, like he actually like interacted with them other than, you know, them. I don't know, it seemed unnecessary as much as I liked seeing Slimer.
And again, he falls into that nostalgia category where it's like, it's great, he's in, like, hey, you can point at him, hey, remember him, but, like, does he actually contribute anything to the story? No. I mean, he gets his moment of eating the possessor ghost, which was fun and funny and stuff like that. But yeah, it's like he was just there to do that one thing and just to smile and look at him and say, hey, it's Slimer. But yeah, Trevor, I think, gets half of what he did in Afterlife, which he didn't get a lot in Afterlife, but he gets less to do here.
I really expected some sort of, like, I feel like they were working their way towards Trevor and Lucky being, like, an item.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't lean into that at all.
I mean, you get a little bit when they have their reunion.
Yeah.
Of, like, but it's, hey, there's... You can't tell if it's friendship or more than that.
You don't get like a good vibe on that because the conversation takes all of 25 seconds.
Yeah, and that's pretty much the last time. Like, I guess they're together later in the movie, but they don't. Nothing else happens. No, it's just they're there.
He could have like held her hand or something, but like we don't get anything.
Yeah. What else? Who else is there? Callie, the mom. She gets less to do in this one. I mean, she has some funny moments, but less to do. Ray gets more to do in this movie, which I like. Like, I like having him and Podcast are a good duo.
They were. I enjoyed the hammer.
Yeah. Hammer gets the views. and I like that we get at least, because this is one of my gripes with Afterlife, was there's the parents of Podcast are nowhere to be seen or mentioned in Afterlife at all. No one's asking where their kid is. No one seems to give a shit. So at least they are mentioned in this movie. I will give them points for that.
They are, yeah.
That
is not his home. I think he's just there for the summer.
With Ray, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll have to, you know, if the story continues, that's the other thing is like, if for all these people that live in Somerville, like Lucky and Podcast, like that's where they're from. That's where their family is, presumably. And to have them come to New York, like what's the reason for them to be there? So at least they sort of tried to explain that away. But to your point, if they make another movie, how to keep these characters in New York? Like, yes, if Podcast is there for just like a summer internship type thing, or, you know, he tells his parents he's at space camp, that's a limited time thing. So if the Ghostbusting stays in New York, are they going to find a reason to keep Podcast there? I guess Lucky is more or less kind of employed now for the Ghostbusters, like, science division. She seems to be working there.
So she does
travel for work type of thing. But yeah, she's another one that she got shortchanged in Afterlife. We don't get a lot of time to know her or anything with her. Same here. Who else do we get? Like, Ernie Hudson's Winston comes back with a little bit more to do. He has some good moments, but again, the OG cast is basically there just for cameos, I feel, aside from Ray. Ray was actually involved in the plot since the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. I feel like he's definitely in the mentor role. And I feel like Winston's more financial backing.
Which is fine. And
like business decisions.
Yeah.
Not scientific.
And I'd
ectoplasm decisions.
Yeah. I mean, I'd still like to have Ray and Winston just together because I think that's a fun duo too. Like, just have them there doing somehow contributing any way they can. Like, I did like Ray's kind of like reaching for the glory days type of thing. Like, that part of the story for him. That worked for me. Like I said, Winston was just kind of there. As I mentioned, Venkman, Bill Murray, I could take it or leave it. I love Bill Murray. I don't think he needs to be in these movies anymore. Again, we mentioned Annie Potts. We need more time with her. Getting to the new cast. Patton Oswalt's character is strictly there for a cameo. I don't think we need it anymore with him. I'm fine with the way he was used.
That was actually one of my favorite parts of the movie.
Yeah.
Was the hieroglyph sort of taking shape in front of you and sort of explaining like the history of Garaka, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was very well done. And I felt like this movie lacked more of that.
Yeah. The other ones, like I said, James Acaster or Acaster. Ooh, excuse me. How do you say his name? I gotta look up. I keep forgetting to look at IMDb to see what his actual character name is. But I mean, he was good. He was funny. He had some moments. Again, I don't know enough about the character to really care one way or the other.
He feels like an M character to me.
What do you mean, M character?
M as like 007. He has.
Okay.
Q. Is it Q that's the weapons expert?
Q.
Guy?
Yeah. Q's the tech guy.
He feels like a Q character where he's just there to like outfit them with the coolest and newest.
Yeah. All right. So his character's name is Lars.
Lars. Okay.
Which I think I missed somewhere in there. Let me, while I'm looking at the cast list, who else are we missing? I mean, the big one is Kumail. I think Kumail is a very good addition to the cast. I love Kumail. His character is, it's somewhat difficult because I think we get enough from his character to kind of know where he's coming from, and he's an integral part of the story.
Yeah.
To give him kind of like this arc. But at the same time, you can tell there's too much going on between Phoebe and Gary and maybe even you could consider Ray part of that and Kumail. Like, that's, there's a lot of character arcs and I don't know how I want to say it, but there's a lot of focus on these characters, I feel like, in the movie. And it's more difficult to keep track of everybody and follow it all.
Yeah, I feel like if they would have focused more on one thing than the others, they could have brought the other characters in to, like, they sort of play with another character's arc, but in the self, like, it gives them more to do.
Yeah.
They try to make too many arcs.
Yeah. And I think, I think Leslie said this when we got out of the movie, but Kumail's like living his best life. he has now been in a Marvel movie as a Marvel superhero. He's been in Star Wars, and now he's in Ghostbusters. Like, that dude is making the rounds, and I fucking love it. Like, I'm so happy for him, because, like, I want to vicariously live through him for this kind of stuff, but it's great. And he had, I think, some of the funniest moments in the
100%.
Movie.
He was the comedy relief. Not that it really needed comedy relief, because there's a lot of funny moments to this that it makes, the movie made me giggle a lot, so.
Yeah, yeah. I think him and Paul Rudd were probably the two, for me, the funniest characters mm-hmm. in the movie. I think they had the most times that made me laugh. Who else did we get? The big, I think, kind of maybe reveal and maybe twister for this movie was Emily Aylin Lynn's Melody, the ghost character that befriends Phoebe. That was something I didn't see coming. Yep. Like, when Phoebe goes out to play chess at night, she's, you know, been sidelined and the chess pieces start moving. My first reaction was, oh shit, they actually found a way to bring Egon back. And I think she goes through the same thing because she's disappointed when it's not him. And so that was I think, a fun thing to play with, in that she befriends another ghost character. But this time, instead of a family member, it's more, I couldn't tell where they're going. I think you could probably interpret it either way, whether she viewed Melody as a best friend or a possible love interest.
That's what we were sort of leaning towards, because it really felt like there was going to be a kiss before, like, the bad stuff started happening, because there was a vibe there. Too.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, I think that was a good arc for Phoebe and her character. Like, I liked all of that stuff, putting her through something, I don't want to say traumatizing, but, you know, they even mentioned it in Afterlife, which, like, trying to get her to make mistakes and put herself out there and try to recover from making bad decisions, because she didn't maybe do a lot of stuff like that growing up. So now she's hitting an age where she's, you know, mid teenager, 15, you know, starting to get the interest in other, mm-hmm. other people, you know,
start experimenting a little bit. Yeah.
High school love type stuff. Yeah. So that all worked for me, and I thought that was cool. And I think McKenna Gray still does a great job. I think she's still
so great. The thing that Melody didn't really work for me is I didn't think they did a good job of explaining her connection to Garaka very well.
Right. Yeah, the twist was there just to give, I think, the audience, like, oh shit, when is the turn going to happen? Like, you're just kind of waiting for shit to go down. But yeah, we get bare bones exposition for I lost my family and Garaka's the only one to
like
get
yeah.
me reunited
like
with
that. How did she meet him? How did, like, I expected a little bit of you know, backstory to that, and we really didn't get anything. So my mind was wondering, like, where's the connection between her and Garaka? And quite frankly, he opens the gate, right? Why didn't she take it? Like, didn't really get an explanation on that either. So that was a really fuzzy part for me that didn't taste good when I saw it. I don't know if a second viewing made it a little better, but
I don't know if I don't know if it was any more clear, at least for me, the second time. Like, I feel like you're, at least the way I interpreted it, is Garaka is trying to use Melody to obviously get to Phoebe to trigger the whole thing. When it happens, and it seems like Melody should at this point move on, I was under the impression that Garaka basically just made an empty promise and wasn't actually able to do it. Once the thing happened, she couldn't go. But the movie doesn't tell you that.
You have to infer it.
And I think you could also interpret it the other way, where is maybe everything happened the way it should, and Melody chose to stay to help Phoebe one last time before going over. So I think you could read into it either way. But yeah, I mean, I think that whole dynamic was good. Garaka is another one where as a villain, looks really fucking cool. Based on the marketing, I thought we would have that ghost a lot more in the movie and not just the last 20 minutes. I really thought they'd be fighting with Garaka at least the back half of the movie. But they don't get him out of the orb until, I don't know, 20 minutes left, it feels like.
I don't know. I feel like
2-hour movie.
Yeah, yeah. He's not in it long. He's in the orb more than he is out of it. So
yeah.
So I felt like character design, I'd give it maybe like a B on that, because I felt like he looked too much like, the mummy characters from the mummy. If you remember, like the guard characters and stuff from the mummy.
I could see. Oh yeah, yeah. The ones that had the elongated mouth when they shout and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It seemed kind of, I don't know. It didn't quite impress me, I guess.
I was gonna say, I thought you thought he looked like, the devil lady from Diablo. That's all over Diablo 4 covers.
Yeah, a little bit like that with the horns.
Yeah.
yeah. Lilith from Diablo.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Yeah.
Imposing, yes, but I didn't quite understand it. They kept going over his horns and a little rehashing how the horns were removed, and it like removed his power, but it didn't feel like his power boosted when he got his horns back, or that his power was less when he didn't have them.
The whole power thing with Garaka was one thing they kept explaining, but like, yeah, I'm with you. I didn't understand visually how it was working. Like, they're talking about like literally scaring people to death. I got no sense of that.
No,
it just looked like ice powers everywhere.
Yep.
So the fact that they repeat that line over and over and over again, like, it didn't,
we never,
I don't know if that was a subplot that was cut.
Yeah. We never got the, you know,
there's no payoff for that.
Thank you. They payoff. I couldn't think of the word. We didn't get a payoff for that. And I kept expecting like a payoff for that, and we never really got it.
Yeah. So that was underwhelming, I think, to me, that part. Mm-hmm. But I think as a villain, I thought he was really cool looking. I just wanted more of him.
I expected him to be a bit more of a commander of ghosts, honestly, which is why he wanted to open the containment unit. And he didn't really command any ghosts. I was sort of hoping.
Yeah, you'd think he should have, like, at that point, he storms the firehouse with an army of ghosts. It's just him.
Right. Well, he storms the firehouse, then he gets the army of ghosts. And then I felt like we needed a bit of a battle, almost, between
that would have cost another $50 million. They didn't want to do that.
Right. It seemed like it should almost be like Braveheart, where the two, they clash. Yeah. Or like Lord of the Rings, where, you know, like the horsemen and the orcs clash, and then you see like sort of a melee.
And see, that would have been a way to give, when you have the line of Ghostbusters trying to stop him from getting to the containment unit in the firehouse, if you're fighting an army of ghosts and each person has to then chase a ghost and catch them, that's the moment for every individual character to have a moment.
Wouldn't that have been cool?
You could have had Janine catch her first ghost.
Yeah, the ghost whale pops up, and maybe like the running ghost who takes his thing in Ghostbusters 2 pops up. You know, you could get a little bit more nostalgia added and have these individual people like do their thing. Because quite frankly, I would have liked to have seen Kumail. I can never say his name correctly.
Kumail.
Use his like fire weaver.
Yeah, yeah.
Skills, because we're presented with his ancestry to be sort of like an antiquated ghost form of ghost busting, right? Yeah. You know, like they're the ones that sort of did it before the Ghostbusters figured out all like PKA meters and proton packs and
right
containment units and whatnot. So I would have liked to have seen him sort of flex that power on something less powerful than Garaka.
Mm-hmm.
But we never really get to get any kind of exposition on that.
Right. I mean, he still, I guess, has, you know, he has his moment.
He does. And it's good. I like that moment. But I kind of want him to go against, like, a Slimer or, like, what was that guy in the first Smelter? What was his name?
Muncher.
Yeah, something to that effect.
And that's one of the burning questions I think I have is if they make an eventual sequel, is Kumail part of the team now? Like, he doesn't even technically need a proton pack. So is the team going to expand with not just like scientists and you know, paranormal bug catchers? Is it going to be people within supernatural abilities that are going to be part of the team and start to fill out the roles?
Right. I wonder if we're going to have I don't know how to say it, like a yoga Ghostbusters or like a organic Ghostbusters who don't need the proton packs and don't need all the gizmos and gadgets. And he almost like has his own little sect where he like, you actually have to train and like focus. And
at that point, does it take away from sort of the, I don't know, formulaic Ghostbuster stuff? Like part of the fun of the Ghostbusters, I think, is the tech and stuff. So if you start getting people with supernatural abilities that don't need the tech, is that more or less fun? I don't know.
I feel like it could go either way depending on like what you enjoy from the Ghostbusters franchise.
Yeah.
But yeah. You could almost lean more if like he gets his own group, that could be your sort of spinoff where it maybe leans more into, you know, the thriller sort of aspect instead of like more of a, I don't know, call it like comedy adventure.
Maybe. Right. Yeah. I should try to find it while we're talking. There's a guy that I follow. I don't know how familiar you are with online personalities, but Greg Miller he's a video game journalist that used to work for IGN, eventually left IGN, made his own company called Kind of Funny, and they do podcasts and YouTube channels and mostly video game focused stuff. But they do movie reviews. They'll do this. And Greg is a diehard Ghostbusters fan.
Okay.
But he was tweeting out like his pitch for a Ghostbusters movie. And I kind of fucking love it. So I wanted to try to find it to make sure I don't butcher the pitch that he was trying to do. I just don't know how long ago he tweeted it and where I can find it. So his pitch, and I'll try to read this as quickly as possible. It's finally happened. The Ghostbusters has been franchised. There are locations across America. Most are having time of their life busting ghosts, living the dream. This is not their story. This is the story of Scottsdale, Arizona. Tucked away in a strip mall next to Great Clips and Domino's, the Arizona Ghostbusters phone never rings. And when it does, it's just parents begging the Ghostbusters to come prove to their children, terrified by YouTube footage of a 100-foot marshmallow man walking around national monuments and New Yorkers walking around national monuments, meaning like the Statue of Liberty. New Yorkers freezing in solid seconds that their house isn't haunted, or just fake catching a ghost so the kids can calm down. On a late night shift, our lead Ghostbuster, played by Agent Adam Brody, gets one of these at the end of the rope parent calls, heads out with his partner, Haley Lou Richardson, which I don't know who that is, in a beat-up 2020 Mini Cooper Ecto-1 arrives on the scene, sleepwalking through the inspection and doing the same song and dance he's done dozens of times to calm petrified toddlers. Brody is stunned when the PKA meter suddenly springs to life and the family's 5-year-old daughter is pulled into another dimension. It's Ghostbusters meets Poltergeist. It's one house, one captured kid, one frightened family, and one crew of part-time Ghostbusters learning to fly.
Hmm.
Scottsdale is too far away from New York for any real backup, and even if backup was closer, Brody wouldn't take it because this is his team's first legitimate case and want to prove themselves, no matter how many mistakes they make along the way, that they're the Ghostbusters. Which, budget-wise, that's a smaller budget. That sounds like a really cool story. And does some of the other stuff that I've wanted to see. Franchising the Ghostbusters, you're focusing on a smaller team to get to know these people before maybe eventually bringing them into other things.
And quite frankly, like, I like that it's based in New York because a lot of stuff can happen in New York, but the New York thing has been done 3 times now.
Yeah.
Four times now if you count Answer the Call.
Right.
Which is one of the things that I really enjoyed about Afterlife was it was in Oregon? I don't know. Illinois? I don't freaking know. It was out in the boonies somewhere.
I want to say Somerville, Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
I don't know if I'm right, but that's what my gut's telling me. But yeah, I think that could be cool. And yeah, New York, they try to make it a character of the movie, and I think it works for the most part. And I mean, the firehouse is just iconic, but I think there's ways to, you know, if you branch out and again, it comes back to, I think, franchising the business. You just start making other locations and suddenly you hopefully can turn those locations into something iconic as well.
Maybe
everybody's going to need some sort of a headquarters or something.
Right. Maybe you don't need to franchise it. Maybe you need to have the Ghostbusters do more like expeditions.
Globetrotting.
Yeah. Like, oh shit, we heard of this ghost in Scottsdale, Arizona. You know, like, let's.
I mean, that I feel like should be. If I'm pitching a next movie, that's what it should be, is that the ghost problem is now worldwide.
Yeah.
The Ghostbusters team that we have been following is not enough to tackle a worldwide spread of ghosts. They are trying to globetrot. They're being funded by Winston. They just can't get to every call.
Right. So when they go to a call, they almost have to answer call, but like then recruit there if, you know, maybe the people that they've just helped with, maybe they're like, wow, this is awe-inspiring. Can I join? And then that starts the franchise thing.
Or I think by the end of the movie, they solved the big problem, but realize, yes, we can't keep doing this. And then it franchises out. If you wanted to do spinoffs from there, that's when you do it.
Yeah, because the Ghostbusters original movie gets like that, where they're all frazzled, they're smoking, they look like they're losing sleep, which is why they hire Winston. You can do that.
Right.
Except, you know, by a branch, you know, you're getting frazzled as a branch, so you hire a new branch instead of just a new Ghostbuster, you know?
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's something I'd like to see. And again, I don't know how they do it well for a movie, because again, the bloated cast, I think, takes away from the type of movie we can focus on and the one maybe we want to see. So to your point, other shows I think would work. I'd be totally fine with that again. It's like, I love Ghostbusters so much that I want more and not less. Like, I'd love to just keep, I'm one of those people that will just keep taking the content, good or bad. Yep. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to see good stuff and have everyone else like the good stuff so that then, again, it continues to happen. But, and it's tough. Like, everybody, just like everything else that people grew up with, it's like there's such a nostalgic and referential, reverent look back at like the OG stuff, the stuff we all grew up with. And it's like, can it ever be done again? And is that something people should shoot for or just try to, like, Ghostbusters was made as a one-off movie. It had no intention of making other sequels, and yet it's spawning a franchise now and marketability that it's like, should it continue or should this never have happened? And is it proving that if these movies are struggling, that it should have just ended with one? I don't know.
So critically, I feel like the critics are saying that they should put this franchise to rest. But if you look at the viewer scores, I feel like viewers want more content. But we also have to sort of show up monetarily, because Sony's not going to keep making them if they're not going to make the money on them.
That's the stuff that kills me, is like the people that want more but won't pay for it. And then they go, well, why did this get canceled? Because you didn't do anything.
You didn't pay the money to go see the movie, you know?
I mean, I'm guilty of that with a lot of TV shows. Like, I, you know, certain TV shows that it's like, why'd they cancel this? Oh, because no one watched it. It's like, oh, shit, yeah, I guess I didn't watch it real that much either. Or, you know, I fell off after it. Or yeah, you don't... Back when, like, DVR was a thing, like, you wouldn't watch it on the live premiere, which is when they factor in the ratings for what gets renewed and what's canceled. You watch it the week after or 2 weeks later when no one cares what you're watching, and it's just not registering the view. And then something gets canceled. So yeah, there's ways to support things you like. And most of the time it's give it your time and attention when it first releases and throw your money at it. And if neither of those things happen, those things go away.
They really do. And it's, and now in like this, I hate to spun it like this, but Warner Brothers has seemed to start this like cancel culture thing with content where, you know, we didn't get Batgirl. We didn't get Looney Tunes versus or Coyote
Acme versus Coyote, Coyote versus or
Acme or something like that, which sounded like, especially from Will Fort's blurb about it, sounded fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why you wouldn't just put it out there. And even if it doesn't make what you spend on it, you can recoup and maybe even start. You never know what's going to be a cult classic, you know? You never know. That could be a cult thing.
The definition of like art. You don't know how people are going to react to it until it's out there. And if it's done, why would you not just put it out there and see what happens?
Yeah, but just the corporate,
the business part of that, I do not understand.
The corporate greed, I don't know, corporations, and it just, it doesn't resonate fans.
And it puts me in a, like, it keeps, I don't want to get sidetracked in it, but like the physical media, the death of physical media right now is driving me up a wall. Mm-hmm. Like Blu-ray discs for movies, they just do not sell them in stores anymore.
You can't even get them at Best Buy. That's crazy.
That's what I mean. Yeah, Best Buy, Target has no more shelf space for this stuff. Best Buy, I haven't been at a Best Buy in a while, but they were very, very minimal for Blu-rays.
Best Buy is more of an appliance store than it is. Media Play was one of my favorite places, and I know you are probably the same way. You could get freaking everything there. It was awesome. You get books, music, DVDs, video games. It was incredible.
It's like there's something to be said with just the, you know, again, something that people didn't support. No one was buying Blu-rays, so everybody started doing streaming and digital. So now that has gone away, and no one's going to care until all their digital shit starts to disappear.
Because
the whim of these companies.
It started to
happen. Because it is going to happen.
It really has started to happen. There have been some digital companies that have gone under and taken things off. Like the Willow show. You can't watch it.
Yeah.
You literally cannot watch it now. Because it's
and they
not
never released a Blu-ray for it.
You can't,
which is really fucking stupid.
Unless you somehow had the technology to make yourself a copy of it while it was streaming.
Yeah, basically pirate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, yeah, that's not the way we should be doing it, but to preserve
but
this
I feel
stuff,
like
that's
the people
the way
that
you can.
Watch this stuff for free, which I know a couple that use, you know, pirating software to get this stuff. They own that file. They can pull it up anytime they want. And, like, that's not really a good business model for anybody. Like, if that's the way that the only way you can do it, guess what people are going to do? That.
Right. Yeah. So that's a, you know, a whole other separate discussion, but I've been trying to keep my eye out for any movies that I need to buy, but because I'm trying to get is, and I don't want to keep spending the money because it's like, it gets expensive, but at the same time, it's like, I feel like I have an obligation now to try to preserve movies that I enjoy on a disc somewhere.
Yep. I'm much more selective because they do get expensive, but you know, like I own Ghostbusters Afterlife on Blu-ray, you know, it's
yes.
You own the movies you like.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, anything else we need to talk about spoiler wise? I'm trying to remember if there's anything else specific with the movie.
So were you sort of confused as to why Winston let them use all their old decrepit equipment for so long when he had like 17 containment units and 35 proton packs and like that?
As far as like story goes, that was one that was like,
yeah, that didn't make any sense. You would have thought that he would have wanted to make their lives easier Like, wasn't that his
It's
role?
like they know the containment unit is filling up and they're not telling them they have another unit where you can deposit stuff. No, just keep throwing stuff in there, see if it breaks. No.
Yeah, it
tell
it,
them
it
to put it in the new one.
Right, or upgrade it or something. Like yeah. that part didn't make sense to me at all. It made me feel like Winston was like, "Haha, those schlubs in the firehouse, they don't know like what good equipment is." And even seeing the face of Paul Rudd and the others, when they show them all the new equipment, it was kind of like, well, why aren't we using this stuff?
Right. They're all on the same team. So why is it so secretive?
Right. It didn't make sense to me at all. Like, you would have thought that as soon as they got to the firehouse, been like, oh, by the way, here's your new equipment. Here's Ecto-1 that's not, like, got electrical issues and you can't roll down a window.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Like, if he's, like, multi... What, billion, I think they
However
said?
Rich he is, yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible. And yet they're still driving around that original Ecto-1 doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like,
Not
I can
to mention,
see Ecto
they should
one
have a
being...
second Ecto-1 somewhere. Where the hell's the Ecto-1
or
Ghostbusters 2?
Just make an Ecto-2 or I can't remember what the actual, like, lore of Ghostbusters had, an Ecto-1, Ecto-2, Ecto-3, I think. But, you know, like...
I mean, if you go by the cartoon, one of them was like a helicopter. And
yeah,
them,
yeah. And
I think
like
the
this,
bike that they drive with Rey is meant to be Ecto-2. Like a callback to because
I think it did
the cartoon.
Say like Ecto-2 or something.
Something it but, had an Ecto license plate for sure.
Yeah, but you know, that didn't make sense to me, and I felt like we could have had the newer tech stuff, which is the stuff that like you and I want to see. Like it was cool to see the drone.
Yeah.
Trap, you know, because last and Afterlife we got like the remote control car trap, you know, I want to see cool stuff like that, you know, and it was weird to see. I realized they were leaning into the nostalgia part of it, but it didn't make sense in my brain when we were talking about it afterwards. Like why not give them
right
biggest best stuff? Why not showcase that, you know, like we're the new Ghostbusters, like we got the tech to get this shit done, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's the one of the biggest story hiccups, I think, that no one seems like they're playing on the same team when they're all Ghostbusters. Trying to think if there's anything else in the story that bugged me. I think we talked about most of the stuff that was kind of like...
Does it?
That didn't sit well with me, which I think is like Garaka's powers, the killing with fear never really happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Ghostbusters not communicating was a thing.
Do you get bugged by seeing previews for stuff and then that never being in the movie? Does it bug you?
Yeah, because I think we talked about that coming out of the movie, that there was stuff in there that was not, and I've only seen one trailer, and that even stuff from that trailer was not in this movie, and that kind of bugs me. Right now I can't think of anything specific of what was in the trailer that we didn't see, so I'm hoping you have some examples.
So there's a scene in the trailer where they're all in red.
Oh,
red,
yes.
Almost like ghost-busting warm jackets because of the cold.
Yeah.
And it looks like they're all looking down on something, and you just see Paul Rudd go, whoa! and like that made me believe from the trailer that there was going to be like a large entity.
Yeah.
Right? Like, a Stay Puft size entity or something large. And now Grokka was large, but he wasn't like big in the firehouse or any kind of thing like that. You know, I kind of was under the impression that we were going to get something big.
It's also funny to me too, that shot specifically from the trailer that wasn't in the movie is all over the posters.
Yeah. And you don't get it.
Yeah.
It kind of bugs me. Jess sort of thought that it was a way to showcase what's in the movie without giving you like spoilers, which I can understand.
I think it's more complicated than that. I think my understanding is you figure they're in the process of shooting, so they don't know how the final story is going to be cut and edited together. They're just using footage for a trailer of what has already been shot. So it's probably something they shot with every intention of putting in the movie. But to put out a trailer, they're just like, okay, we got this clip to use. We can put this one. Let's just use this thing. And they cut it based on what they have to work with. And some of that stuff just does not end up in the final film, which is fine. That's the process of movie making. But, and it's, again, part of the reason why I try to avoid trailers, because I've had that happen to me with past movies as well, where certain things you'll remember from the trailers, and I'm expecting it to come back around and see it. And then when it doesn't happen, I'm like, okay, where did that fit? Now I feel like there's a missing piece somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's just something else to distract me from a movie, which I want to try to go in as clean as possible and just let the movie hit me with what it has. And the only way to do that is really try to do what Josh does, and for anything I really care about, and just go complete cold turkey. And I don't know if I am that strong to do that. I have to give myself something.
Some of the fun things, and it sort of died down since the internet, but some of the fun things that I always thought was, you didn't know a movie was happening until you saw a preview for it in front of a movie that you wanted to go see. And then when you saw that preview, you're like, I'm so freaking stoked for this. This looks awesome. I didn't know this was happening. And I feel like you don't get that anymore just because of all the social medias. And
well, there wasn't the internet.
Right.
Like, you would see the preview in the theater before a movie you were going to see, and then you could not go home and rewatch it.
Right.
That was in the theater, and that is it. So it's easier to forget that stuff when you can only see it once every time you go to the theater. But I think that was one of the conversations I think we had after 300, right? That was when we were just hanging out. We were talking about movie trailers and avoiding that stuff. And because I remember talking about how the Phantom Menace was the trailer that did it for me. That was the first one I remember, the teaser for Phantom Menace being uploaded to the internet and trying to download it so that then I could rewatch it over and over and over again on the stupid QuickTime player on a dial-up internet, which took fucking forever. You got this
pixelated piece of crap trailer.
It looked like crap, but it was the best fucking thing in the world. Like, it didn't matter.
We didn't know any better at that point, though, so.
Yeah, that was all we had. Yeah.
Like, looks awesome, you know? And that's like when you see Nintendo 64 graphics, you're like, Mario looks so lifelike, and you're like, wow, he's so pixelated now.
Yep. So blocky. But yeah, I remember doing that with like every Star Wars trailer, like the prequel stuff. Like, those were the ones I was downloading and watching on repeat and on repeat and on repeat. All right. Anything else? I feel like there's probably other stuff I should talk about. I can't remember if there's anything else that I wanted to touch on. I think we've gone through all this stuff that I wrote down. I
feel like when we are in line to see Dune, we saw some Ghostbusters merch. And Ghostbusters pops for this movie, and they had ghosts that didn't appear in the movie as like pops you could buy. So I was a little taken aback that they had merch for stuff that you didn't get to see in the movie.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I remember that, but I mean, it could just be ghosts that are like in the background. You really got to be looking for them or something like that. Or concepts that meant to be in the movie and were cut or something. I don't know.
Maybe they were the ghosts that were in like the museum of ghosts that they were keeping at bay.
Yeah, it could be.
It could have been, but.
Which I do think that like, so going, I guess that whole aquarium thing, I like the idea of that. Like the tech center, the studying ghosts, trying to understand them, where they're coming from, their abilities, and that kind of thing. But I thought that was really cool.
It was cool, but I would have liked to have seen them in action trying to study. Like, why? Like, I didn't understand why. It was more of, like, showing off than...
Just to build tension for later when the power goes out.
Yeah. Like, that was the only reason it was there. But, like, why do they have them there? Why are they not in the containment unit? Why these ghosts?
Right.
What makes them special, you know, the possessor I understand, but the rest of them you don't really get any kind of anything about it. So,
and I liked the idea that, like, yes, Podcast and Ray are trying to find possessed artifacts for their YouTube channel to get views and stuff like that, but what they're actually doing is gathering the stuff to give to Winston and the team to study, to try to figure this shit out and pull them out to capture them. Like, that was a cool thing.
No, I really enjoyed that. I thought that was a really cool callback when he sort of brings the stuff to him. You know, I thought that was neat.
And that was, maybe, I think I noticed on the first viewing, I think it was a little bit more apparent on the second viewing, but like when they first introduced the like Callie and Gary and Phoebe and Trevor to the aquarium, they're all getting the tour, they're talking about stuff, and then like literally you just kind of turn around and Ray's there. Like, you never see Ray enter.
No.
He just shows the fuck up, and you're like, what the hell?
I actually jerked back a little bit when he showed up. I'm like, whoa, where did he come from, you know?
It's almost meant to be, like, one of those people that's, like, oh, just standing there beside you silently. So when you turn, you're like, oh, Jesus. But no one plays it that way in the movie.
No,
so you
just...
can. There was definitely something cut of him coming into or entering.
Yeah, because they were all like, oh, yeah, hey, Ray, you're there.
Yeah, they're perfectly fine with him just standing there creepily in the corner next to them with no apparent... conversation.
But it was almost ghostly, his appearance, you know, like all of a sudden he was there.
Yeah.
Didn't it seem like didn't you question just for a half second that maybe he was an apparition of sorts?
I don't know if I'd go that far, but I definitely was expecting more of like the jump scariness for it, just because it felt like he came out of nowhere.
it really did, because you didn't think he was there.
So I'm anxious to I'm hoping they do it, because not everybody does it anymore. But when I can finally own this on disc, that they will have deleted scenes for stuff that was cut. And even, I love the fact when, certain movies, you can go through the deleted scenes and it'll have director commentary to tell you where it should have fit, why it was cut.
And why it was cut, yep.
And that kind of stuff. I find that stuff very interesting. And maybe it'll explain all those trailer shots that we saw, if that was stuff that was actually meant to be in the movie.
I'm hoping that they're deleted scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, like, even going back to the trailer, I think the trailer really tried to show... It showed more of Garaka in the trailer, I think. Well, not more, but the amount of Garaka we get in the first trailer that I'd seen for this movie, I expected more Garaka in the movie. The majority of stuff we see in the trailer is the majority of stuff we get in the movie. And it is, like... I try to avoid the trailers that give me third act stuff. Everything with Garaka in the trailer was third act stuff. So it's
third,
like,
act stuff.
What the hell?
It makes me wonder what the trailers for the original Ghostbusters were like, because we only got Gozer in like the very final act.
All right. So when you say first Ghostbusters, do you mean Afterlife or OG 1984?
OG, like 84.
So I think it's a completely different marketing tactic. I think. In the 80s, you're not marketing the plot. You're not marketing the franchise. Especially for Ghostbusters, you are marketing the stars.
Oh.
I guarantee
Murray,
you that trailer is all
Harold
about...
Harold Ramis.
Yeah, the comedy between Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, Dan Aykroyd, just the jokes and stuff like that. You're probably not seeing any of the ghosts, if at all. Because you figure, even back then, Ghostbusters wasn't a thing. No one knew what it was. You can't market the symbol or the Ecto-1 or the firehouse or the proton packs. No one knows or cares. You're marketing the people that they know. So yeah, after this, we might actually just have to find a trailer and watch it, just because I'm kind of curious, but that would be my guess. And now today, everybody knows what a Ghostbuster is. Even if you don't know what Ghostbusters are, you know, the no ghost symbol, that logo is everywhere.
It is.
So you at least have some sort of inkling of what's going on, but It's a whole different marketing tactic for these movies, is that people know what the Ghostbusters are. It could be a little bit star driven. Like, everybody knows Paul Rudd. I think he has a pretty good fan base, so he's all over the trailers. But it's still kind of like more leaning into the franchise as a whole and less about the people in it, I think, when they market these now.
I forgot to ask you, at the end of Afterlife, we got a McKenna Grace song about Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
I don't think we got that at the end of this one.
I don't think we did either.
Okay, because she is artist as well, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know how much she sings, but yeah, she does have some songs out there. So I haven't like gone through her discography or anything like that, so I don't know how much she has, like, you know, how many albums or songs or anything like that. But yeah, she did do one for Afterlife. Speaking of the music, too, have you tried to listen to the soundtrack? I was trying to listen to the soundtrack for a little bit. I don't think this one did as well for me as it did for Afterlife, because it's different composers.
It's Hans Zimmer in this, right? Or no. Hans Zimmer was Dune.
Hans Zimmer was Dune. It was okay. Rob... I gotta look this up now. Rob Simonson or Rob... For Frozen Empire, it's Dario Marinelli. For Afterlife, it was Rob something.
So I felt that the music didn't...
Rob Simonson, sorry.
Enhance anything for me in this one, and the music I felt gave me goosebumps at points in Afterlife.
Afterlife did a really good job of hitting like 1984.
And I feel stuff. Like the music was mostly forgettable in this one.
Yeah. And I think there was a few music cues I recognized that was like, okay, this is Ghostbusters. But for the most part, yeah, it just kind of glossed over me. So I was trying to actually just listen to the soundtrack on its own to see if anything kind of stuck out. And I didn't get all the way through it. I was trying to go song by song. But yeah, for the most part, not a lot there. Now maybe there's more in the back half of the album. I didn't get to the whole thing, but and you know, when I get to the same music cues, that's the stuff I like and enjoy, but the ones that seem like they maybe do something different or don't do much, that's the stuff that I kind of gloss over. So we'll see if it grows on me. I'll try to keep listening to it, but after two viewings of the movie, the soundtrack didn't really stand out to me.
I concur.
Okay. I know we probably sort of talked about it earlier on, but any other predictions you want to get out for if this franchise eventually keeps going? Anything else we want to kind of put on record and see if we
I hope we they don't overbloat it. I feel like they've already sort of started to do that, so I feel like they need to scale it back now.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they'll take that hint, I guess, from the critic reviews and stuff, and they'll try to scale it back, but I kind of hope they do.
I'd like to see Jason Reitman come back and direct. I think he's a good director. I think this team is good. Like, I think him and Gil Cannon know what they're doing with this franchise, so I'd like to see them at least continue to write, maybe.
Yeah, but I feel like Reitman has a better eye for moments, I guess.
Okay.
You know, there were moments in Afterlife that really hit you, and I feel like I didn't really get any good moments out of this one.
So I don't know this for a fact, but I know Jason, you know, his father, Ivan Reitman, directed the first two movies and was involved with him in Afterlife, and then he passed away after Afterlife came out. Afterlife is a very personal, you know, story about a father type of thing that I don't know if he would even want to direct, because Ghostbusters is that personal to him, and now he's lost his dad, and then, you know, again, just a guess. I'm actually surprised he was even involved as much as he was with this one, even writing it and maybe helping produce, or at least, you know, helping Gil with it, that I expected him just kind of to write and kind of like back off, but yeah, we'll see. I would love to have him come back and write and direct again, but I don't know if he would actually do it. Maybe a couple years removed, maybe, but
yeah. As far as predictions, I hope they sort of change the scene a little bit. Something out of the wheelhouse that we've seen yet. You know, we've seen rehashing of the firehouse in this one. We saw the rehashing of a ghost in the first one. So I kind of hope that they take them out of New York and give us something completely new.
Yeah.
In the next one. Those are my predictions.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I don't really catch, like, the containment unit is busted open, ghost escape. They don't get to go catch them. Like, it kind of leaves the movie if they're going to go to work, but we don't see the end result of all that stuff.
Yeah, one thing we didn't even get to talk about, and we didn't bring up, were the mini Stay Puffs. Did you like them or hate them?
I didn't think I cared for them as much in this one. They felt like they were just kind of there because they needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Even like the mid credit scene we get with them was pointless. It was there for a gag, but I was hoping it would set up the next movie or something.
And it didn't do any of that.
No.
And I felt like they tried to put them into like the core mechanic of the movie with like the them like, oh, we're listening to Garaka. But then that comes back to my whole point of Garaka should have been like a commander of ghosts, and he really never reached that potential because he seemed like he was already commanding Melody, but it didn't seem like he had command of anybody else to help him.
Yeah, the only time we really get that sense is when he takes control of Phoebe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Yeah. I don't know if I have any big predictions for the next one. I mean, sort of echoing what you said, I think I'd like to see maybe a little bit smaller cast just to be able to focus the story a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I would be totally fine if Kumail comes back. I think he's really cool. I'd like to have more with the character. I'd love to be, even though he has like the supernatural firebending powers or whatever, I'd still love to see him with a proton pack. Just give him the tech and let's roll with it. Still wanted, you know, the Spangler family, I still would like to have them involved. I like a lot of those characters. I'd love to see Trevor have more to do somehow, maybe. But I mean, Phoebe and Gary, I think we're good in this movie. I'd love to see them again, continue to do more in the next one. If you're going to have the OG characters in here, try to give them something more to do. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't really care if Bill Murray's there. I'd love to see Janine get more stuff to do. I don't know where I really kind of want the story to go. I just know I want something involved with these characters. I think the characters are good enough that I think they can keep going. And just hopefully have something interesting going on around them. I mean, like Ghostbusters lore, I'd love to see more ghost catching stuff. Like, I didn't think there was a lot of that in this one.
No, there wasn't.
Like, you know, more of them just doing their job, I think, would be fun.
I almost think it would be cool to, like, split them up. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Have Phoebe and, what the hell's his name? Finn Wolfhard.
Trevor.
Go on, like, spring break or something. And then they find ghosts that are somehow connected to the ghosts in New York. Then they have to figure out something to that effect.
All right. So here's what I want to see in the next one. Is I want to see them go full-blown other universe bullshit. Like, to your point, split the team. Have half of them pulled into a ghost realm and the other half in the real world. And somehow they have to work together to get it back. Like, get everybody back together.
Okay.
And I thought...
Now with the containment unit split open, you know, they could probably write something to that.
And I thought they might do something like that. Of, like, some of them would get sucked into there with that containment unit exposure and stuff like that. But it's like they haven't gone full kind of weird. Like comics and cartoons would do that kind of stuff all the time of, you know, ripped into a girl ghost world or something like that. But the movies haven't gone that far yet, even though they've had the fucking Statue of Liberty coated in slime walking down Main Street, New York. They don't want to go that absurd again for some reason, which at least they acknowledge in this one. So, I mean, you're saying it's happened. Just lean into it a little bit more. I don't know.
So we only saw two ghosts leave the containment unit, right? It was that giant, like, whale ghost thing, whale dragon ghost thing. And what was the other one?
I thought there was more. Well, when they come out of the firehouse. But I think there was more that got out before Garaka got sucked back in. So I think there's more out there. But yeah, I think when they started chasing, it was just those two.
But I can't remember the second one. It was the whale ghost.
Yeah, I don't remember the second one either, to be honest. Oh.
It wasn't
not
Muncher or whatever.
No, I don't think. But no, I was just thinking that moment at the end, too. That moment between Phoebe and Gary where she finally calls him dad, I think was a very good moment. That paid off for me, and I enjoyed that part of it. I surprisingly didn't cry. Like, I thought there was going to be a couple moments at the end where I'd finally hit me, like, cry, like, from Afterlife. Because I cry every fucking time I watch Afterlife, but...
Oh, same. It still gives me goosebumps.
This one didn't get me as hard as I thought it would.
No, it didn't. It seemed to lack some of the heart that Afterlife made Afterlife so good.
Yeah.
And that scene, to me, felt more on the forced side.
Okay. See, that worked for me. I don't know what it was. Because, he's trying to be the dad figure, I think, for most of the movie. So to finally get that little payoff at the end, I think, worked.
And that's another thing that sort of drove me nuts about the movie is they never explained really what the relationship is. Is he the stepdad? Did they get married? Or are they just together in the firehouse? Like, we don't get anything.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it just seems like they are together figuring it out. Is the sense that I got.
Right.
Because I didn't look as far as looking for rings on anybody's fingers, but the fact that she's not... Same. If they are married, I think Phoebe would have a maybe easier time calling her dad. Is my, I guess, assumption.
And he even calls himself her step teacher, which is like, well, he's not her stepdad, so like that, like...
I think, yeah, that just
odd indication.
I think it just leans into like he's really unsure how to interact with, you know, what's the line, what he's allowed to do or and stuff like that. So I don't know. I feel like there's still more stuff we could probably figure out and discuss, but I keep kind of drawing a blank and feeling like I'm done and then something else comes up. So I feel like it's probably better just to kind of cut it off. So any final thoughts we want to get to, we'll get to ratings and call it.
Okay.
Final thoughts from you, anything? Or do you just want to get to the ratings?
Oh, I feel like I've given most of my thoughts on the movie. So,
comparison's sake, I did pull up like our reviews for Afterlife. Okay. So you would give an Afterlife 10 out of 10. I gave Afterlife 9.5 out of 10.
Oh, shit.
So what would be your rating out of 10 for this? And we could even, you know, any other final thoughts you can spin into your explanation of the rating and stuff. So what would you give Frozen Empire out of 10?
I would probably give it a 7.5 out of 10.
Okay.
And that's mostly because I felt like it didn't take itself as seriously as the other one. Like, I expect a lot of humor from it. The first one had, Afterlife had some good humorous moments to it. But I felt like the power of Ghostbusters, especially, like, the OG Ghostbusters from the 80s, is they weave the serious into the humor, mm-hmm. you know? And I feel like this one really leans into the humor too much, in my opinion.
Okay.
And that's where I got, like, the adjective, like, the rollicking. It just, it's fun, it's entertaining, but there's not a lot of meat there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually right on the nose with you. 7.5 out of 10 is where I'm landing with this one. I think it's fun. I do not think it's as bad as what the reviews are calling this thing.
No. I was actually nervous to see it because I had read some of the reviews and I'm like, wow, these are like bad.
Yeah.
Like, they're saying this is bad. And I'm like,
yeah,
I usually don't agree with a lot of the critical things. It made me feel better when you started the podcast by giving like viewer scores, which were better.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because I was, you know, I try to avoid all this stuff. And then the week before, when reviews started dropping, I started seeing headlines and pictures of Rotten Tomatoes reviews and stuff. I didn't read them, but even just seeing the scores, I was like, oh God, no, what is happening here? Why?
Yep.
So I
Same.
Definitely don't think it's that bad. Second viewing, I didn't think it was as funny to me, and maybe just because I knew the jokes were coming and I had seen it the day before, so maybe some separation will still be funny and hit a little bit better than the next time. I do think, one thing I didn't mention, I guess, I do think this is probably one of the scarier Ghostbusters films. I think it does more jump scares and that kind of tactics, and I think is a little bit scarier atmosphere for some of the stuff in there.
Okay.
Which I think works. Like, I think Ghostbusters are meant to be funny and scary at the same time. It usually leans more into the humor, I think, but it's meant to have those moments in there, which I think is good. But yeah, overall, I think it's a good movie. Like I said, didn't hit Afterlife levels for me. It will definitely be in the rotation for Ghostbusters movies that I watch. Like, this is up there with them. I mean, really any of them I would watch aside from 2016, but the other ones are all fine.
As much as, you know, I've said some things that I didn't really care for in this movie, I would watch it again.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not gonna, I probably won't go out to the theater to see it again, but I would probably own the DVD or Blu-ray and watch it again. You know,
I'm hoping it sticks in theaters at least a month or two, and I'm hoping it still gets some traction with, you know, we're starting to get into the summertime when other movies are going to start hitting every weekend. So we'll see how long it sticks around. But yeah. Any of my friends listening to this, if you still haven't seen Ghostbusters and you want to go, I am there. Just we'll figure it out. But yeah, I think that's what we got. So that's it for us. If you've enjoyed the show, please support us. Leave a 5-star rating and review. Be sure to give us a share on social media. Make sure to follow or subscribe to keep up with the show. We're on Spotify, iTunes, Google, Anchor, Amazon. Stitcher's gone, so if you're we're watching or listening to us there, it's gone. I think Google is going away as well.
Google Podcast, I think, is going away as well.
Yeah.
I think.
So if you're listening to us on Google, that might be short-lived as well. Feel free to follow us on Facebook. You can search Bry Guy into Super Friends or go to facebook.com/BryGuySuperFriends. Send us questions, comments, topic suggestions. Let us know if you agree with the ratings for this movie, either ours or otherwise. Shoot us an email, BryGuySuperFriends@gmail.com. I will not check it. I still refuse to. For all I know, there's a bunch of stuff in there, but I just haven't seen it.
One of these episodes, we're going to do a mailbag episode and see.
I'll just scroll through the hundreds of emails that are just spam.
we'll just rag on spam emails. It'd be funny.
It'll be like all these ones that are like, hey, I see your podcast is here. Download this to get marketing for. It's like all those spam accounts that are trying to market their thing to get your podcast recognized and all that crap.
I can do overlays for your Twitch channel.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure all that stuff's in there.
Which is just AI art. When you look at their art portfolio, you're like, AI made that.
Yeah. Hit us up on Twitter at BG Super Friends. Andy's done better marketing for that handle than I have, so that's been good. Follow me on Twitch, Jedi Bri Guy. You can search for Jedi Bri Guy. It's Jedi with an I, Bri with a Y. Anytime we do Twitch streams for live broadcasts, anytime I play some games that I want to stream, I will do it there.
He'll eventually do Bioshock. He'll eventually.
Yeah, Bioshock will be finished at some point. It has been like 3 months now since I've done that first stream. So I've already forgotten where I left off and what's going on, but we will eventually get back there. I promised I would do it on stream. I will fulfill that promise at some point.
I mean, you're really giving these people like a huge cliffhanger with the Bioshock stream.
Have the biggest set of blue balls whenever I don't finish it on stream. For anyone that cares.
He used to be my favorite streamer, and then I never watched it Bioshock again.
All he gave me in the last 3 months is a fucking 3-hour podcast that I don't give shits about. Where's your Bioshock at? Oh, man. All right. On behalf of Andy and I, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.